Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday early access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
My company, as he is on Tuesdays and Fridays, he's the host of VSiN Primetime. You can see him on VSiN's betting tailgate shows airing on weekends at 9 a.m. Central. Download the VSiN Watch app, college football, college basketball betting podcast. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. Tim, how did your multi-Dodger parlays go last night?
They survived. I had
George. Tim's got a hockey bet for us. George, a big hockey guy.
Yeah, I'm. I contemplated retirement after
he threw out a winner. He threw out a winner on Saturday that was 6-0 in the first period.
Yeah, the Blue Jackets beat the Capitals 7-0, and Alex Ovechkin was doing an event in Washington D.C. the night before. I'm like, pretty sure he's not going to play at noon the next day, and then they trotted out a dude from the minors to play goalie, and he gave up like 3 goals in 5 minutes. So wish they were all that easy. But, yeah, we're playing the old clinching scenario, fading that. So we'll get to that here in just a moment. But, yeah, the two Dodger parlays that I put in last night and I set on VSiN, these are dumb. And you probably shouldn't tail them, but I wanted to get a couple of draft bets with the juice down.
Yeah.
Because if anyone's familiar with draft betting or stumbled upon it, the juice is very, very strong on some of these.
And yes, big
time.
And
it moves all the time. I mean, you see one report, it's zoop, it moves like, no joke, like 80, 90 cents. So the two bets I wanted to place was under 4.5 cornerbacks and over 8.5 for Shedeur Sanders. So meaning, I think there will be 4 or fewer cornerbacks selected in the first round, and Shedeur Sanders will go 9 or later. But both of those were super juiced. So I paired them with the Dodgers last night, and the Dodgers won by 2, so we're good.
Nothing quite like the old baseball money line. Just enough. What could go wrong? Ever go wrong?
Well, it's funny because I don't know if you're familiar aware of this. So obviously I working at Circa, I get every game you could imagine, right? So I drive home, I've got the MLB radio app, and I listen to the game on the way home, and I think the Dodgers are up like 5-0 or whatever. And I get home, and in Vegas, we live in a weird city where we have not one, not two, six teams are blacked out here.
So you're going to get all the LA teams blacked out, right?
Dodgers, Angels.
So you will then get, I presume,
the Oakland? Bay Area.
I was going to say, well, I would think, I mean, can y'all not get, can you not get, since the A's are coming to Vegas? Like, by the way, that's the A's. It's not the Oakland A's, guys. Come on.
It's just the A's.
It's the A's.
Not
please.
Even Sacramento?
No, not even
no,
Sacramento
just
A's.
The A's.
Wow.
Yeah, it seems like that's going well, by the way.
Good job, John Fisher.
Yeah. I can't wait till your fair city gets a load of him. What a guy he is. You know, and then Arizona, maybe?
Arizona's blacked out. Maybe it's just five.
Colorado?
No, I don't think Colorado's blacked out. So if you get MLB package. Oh, and San Diego.
Yeah, that makes sense. Six, you're going to get all the Southern, yeah, all the California
even
teams.
Even Northern California.
The California teams and the Cardinals. Or
now,
not the Cardinals,
had,
the Diamondbacks.
Now, if I had, like, Sportsnet, I could get it. But if you just get the MLB package, six teams are blacked out in Vegas. And we have zero of them.
I'm also having this weird reality now where I thought I'd had the system figured out. So on my DirecTV linear, if the basketball team, if the in-market basketball teams were playing on that day, Cardinal games, because we're in-market for the Cardinals, mm-hmm. those games would just not be off, or those games would be off-air, but you could watch on the app. Now, like I'm having to watch Cardinal games on the FanDuel Sports Network app. Like, but I'm using my, like, that's the thing that makes no sense. I'm using my DirecTV login and watching on the app, but it's not on it's not on TV.
I think the best deal going out there for Major League Baseball is the radio app. It's like $25 for the whole year, and you can listen to every single game every night.
Well, it's also though, I think it's fair to say this. Baseball's probably the best sport for radio.
Oh, yeah. Because you know what's happening.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I was listening to the Dodgers game last night. I knew I could envision everything that's happening. Like, I'm just a sucker for play-by-play. I'm fortunate enough to do some bowl games and stuff like that. Like, I love play-by-play. That's where I started in this business, and I just figured out I'm probably not that great to ultimately get to where I want to go, so I took a veer off of it, but I still love listening to football, but you miss so much. I mean, I'll say this. There's nothing more, in my opinion, invigorating than calling a basketball game.
I think it's the hardest to call, though.
Oh, it's so great, though. If you just get in a rhythm. I mean, the biggest thing calling a basketball game is just you have to know that you can't look at your board. Like, you got to go off of, like, knowing everybody, and at least on radio.
Yeah, I mean, Eric is our guy. And Hasseltine is so good, and like we're actually pretty lucky in a market where you would think, okay, we're probably not getting the best of the best broadcasters. Like, our television crew could easily be like Pete Pranica did games for TNT. Brevin Knight, Brevin wanted to be like a big time NBA analyst, I think he would. Like, he's that good. And Rob Fisher's our sideline guy; he's great too. But I mean, we have Eric that does play by play on the radio, which I think is very, very difficult thing to do, is calling NBA games, and he's incredible.
Yeah. So, but I love listening to baseball on the radio. And I did it for, 5 years in the minors.
I called college. I've never called.
Whew, college. I did college for a year. That was.
Let me tell you what, there's nothing quite like hopping on the old bus headed to San Luis Obispo to call some Cal Poly Pepperdine midweek. Let me tell you what, that's where you sit there and you go, okay, do I really want to try this?
Yeah, I mean, I think I could say the same. We could start naming some cities that I've been to across the East Coast over a four-year stretch. And boy, they were, I remember just when you sit there in your little tiny booth and you get... I was in Hudson Valley, New York, which is just a stone's throw away from Army, so West Point. So we got pretty good crowds there. And I remember this one guy had my crowd mic sitting out there. And a guy looks back, he's like, hey, you know the Yankees score? I'm like, what? No, I'm doing the radio broadcast.
No, we had the booth, because at Pepperdine, like, our baseball field gets,
your baseball field go into the ocean like your basketball court?
It gets overrated because we have an ocean view. Our press box is about the size of your desk. And so I can't even sit next to my SID, I end up just putting a table out in front of the press box and just setting up from there. And you're trying to run Wi-Fi. This is when Wi-Fi wasn't exactly predictable. I've called high school baseball. There's nothing quite like the feeling of, do you have a phone line? And then they would say, what do you mean? And I was like, well, I needed to hook up. And
going to do high school athletics, it's probably gotten better nowadays because of just internet. But yeah, I remember
it's still. So there are some places you can go that are a lot, honestly, like college. Like, there's so much money at some of these schools, it's like calling a college game in terms of facilities. But then there's still other ones that are high school football stadiums. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, it's not like I'm pointing the finger at them, like, how dare they? But it's like, it's now getting to the point where I'm considering if you're just better off just calling games on Zoom rather than actually using equipment.
I won't name names, but I remember fourth and final year in the minors, and I was sitting in the office, you know, doing whatever I was doing that day, probably doing sales or something. And this former professional, let's say, major four sport radio broadcaster walks in, and he had no longer been with that franchise. And he had done a year in the minors after being with a professional franchise for like two decades.
Did this person try to quote Blazing Saddles? And now maybe calls games on the CW?
Nope, not that one.
Okay.
You wouldn't know him, but I don't really feel like he needs to be named.
Sure.
Regardless, he walks in. He's like, man, you guys wouldn't believe this. He's like, they made me carry my equipment up the steps. And we're just sitting there like, yep.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. I had to do game notes on the road. We're like, yep.
Yeah.
We've been doing that for about 5 years, buddy. That's part of the gig. You don't get paid a lot.
And you work a lot harder.
Oh my God. Hardest I've ever worked in my life was the 4 years I was in the minors. Least amount of money. I think my wife, my first year, priced it out when I was the public relations assistant. I made $800 a month. And she was like, I think you make $2 an hour. I was like, yeah, sounds about right. And I lived in Baltimore, which was about an hour away from the Frederick, Maryland.
Yeah.
So I would drive. I would literally get in the car at like 10 o'clock at night, drive to Baltimore, go to bed, wake up, drive back to Frederick for like, you had to be there at 8 or 9 in the morning for no reason. Yes.
Life on the road.
The joys.
Yes. Everyone talks about riding the bus for the players. What about no one's ever think about the broadcasters. Come on.
Dude, I remember, so I did 3 years in high A ball, which was the Frederick Keys. They're no longer affiliated, unfortunately. They're now in like some other one-off league. And then I did 1 year in the New York Penn League, which is a league that no longer exists because Rob Manfred doesn't like the sport that he commissions.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a cool league because I got to go to Brooklyn and Staten Island, beautiful ballparks. Got to go up to Burlington, Vermont, which was amazing, especially after your team goes 24-51 and you're in Burlington in early September and you're like, oh my God, it's so nice here. This is a good way to end it. But I remember I walk onto the bus, and it's all like new kids, all new draftees. And the understanding in the minors is the first row is the manager and probably the pitching coach. The second row is going to be your other coach, whether it be the hitting or pitching. And then your trainer. So that's the first two rows. And then the third row is the broadcaster and then probably, you know, someone else affiliated with the coaching staff. And I walk in. And I think it was the strength coach. I walk in, and there's a player sitting in the third row. And I'm like, hey, man, that's where I sit. I'm not trying to make a big deal. It's our first road trip of the year. And I look at the strength coach, and I'm like, hey, I'm just like kind of giving him the eye. I'm like, can you say something here? He's like, what's the big deal? I'm like, oh, my God. I was like, I don't sit.
I didn't make the rules, man.
Dude, I don't sit with 19-year-old kids in the back of the bus. I'm sorry. I'm not their friend. I'm the broadcaster. But we got to figure it out. We got moving there, and yeah,
that's where
don't miss those bus rides.
That's where you hope the manager's a cool guy, and like he just goes, hey,
Our manager, so my man that year, I don't know why we got into story time here. My manager that year was cool, but he was so grumpy because he had
been. Well, you said 24-51, right?
Well, this is even before the season started. So his name is Gary Allinson. He was like a backup catcher for the Red Sox for a while. When we'd go to like New England, like Red Sox fans would like be there, like asking for autographs. He was the manager of the AAA affiliate in the Orioles organization for 5 years. And at one point in time, when I believe it was Buck Showalter got hired mid-season to be the manager of the Orioles, he got called up to be the third base coach. So he was like living the dream. And then 2 years later, he was the short season A-ball manager. He was not happy. And there was one time, you know, we didn't get much media, but we were only about like 40 minutes north of Baltimore. So we had this reporter come up talking about the prospects and whatever. And he just tells this reporter, I forget the exact quote. He's like, well, I'm not going to be here next year. And the reporter just looks at me and I'm like, what am I supposed to do? He's a grown ass man. What am I gonna?
Yeah, what it
can't write it. And like he said it. Well, you could write it if you want. So yeah, we didn't have a great manager that year. I did have some cool managers though over the years.
All right, let's see what we got coming up on the program. We'll start with the play-in game. I got a couple of takes that I want to run by Tim. Also, we're gonna have Timothy Gay. His new forthcoming book is Rory Land. I want to find out if Rory winning on Sunday is better or worse for book sales. I got to think that it's certainly helpful. We'll get his approach. He has taken a deep dive into Rory McIlroy on and off the golf course. So we'll do that here at about 2:35. Get into the list. We got NFL lying season going on. We'll get into some of the draft thoughts that Tim has and more. But I find myself increasingly more annoyed right now with NFL lying season. Get into that. Also, at some point, we got to talk about this Braves broadcast story because everyone on the internet is driving me insane. Want to get into that, and then maybe we'll take a look at some of the betting options for tonight. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I think it's fair to say that the biggest game of the night is tonight at the Chase Center in downtown San Francisco. It's kind of like downtown at Chase. It's kind of downtown extreme. But I see if you buy this. I think the Warriors have more at stake than the Grizzlies right now.
Oh, I didn't know if you wanted to continue on that.
No, I'm saying you get to respond.
I would say yes. And here's my two thoughts to it would be, well, actually three. One, nobody thinks Grizzlies are going to win.
Yep.
Nobody. Two, and I fell for it yesterday. On my show, I was legitimately just saying Warriors-Rockets, right? Like, well, Warriors got a chance to beat the Rockets. Not even thinking about this being as a blip.
Sure.
So that would be two. And then three, from the pressure standpoint, as you alluded to, like history's not on the Warriors' side. I don't know if you heard Steve Kerr in classic Kerr fashion, very sarcastic yesterday, saying, well, you know, the play-in tournament doesn't exist. There are no stats. And the reason he said that is because the Warriors are 0-3 all time in the play-in. And one of those losses, of course, coming in the first year of the play-in to the Memphis Grizzlies. So, yeah, I don't think that many people...
Grizzlies have never lost, by the way.
...expect the Grizzlies to win this game. And, you know, it's funny because I think back to 2021. And I remember I was doing the show at VSiN and, you know, we had that great back and forth Lakers Warriors game in which the Lakers ultimately won. I think it was a LeBron like game winning three.
Yeah, was it AD? That seems it right. It was one of they had massive games. I remember that.
So everybody and their mother just assumed the Grizzlies would get smoked, and I think the point spread was like 4.5 somewhere in that ballpark. And I was like, I'm just gonna blindly go with the Grizzlies here. I was like, I don't know if they'll win, but nobody's given them a shot in this one. And I kind of feel like that's the case here in this spot. So, yeah, I think you're on to something here. And I don't know. I'll throw an idea back at you.
Like, all right.
Are the Grizzlies happy that the Warriors lost to the Clippers?
I think the answer is yes, because of the possible options that they could have seen, Clippers, Timberwolves, Warriors, I guess you could throw I guess the Nuggets were technically in there, but I think unquestionably the better matchup for them was going to be playing the Warriors, because the Warriors don't really have anyone inside physically, and so Edie has had pretty good performances against them. Jaren, like Draymond, the one issue is Draymond kind of gets in Jaren's head, but Jaren's had very good games against them. And then the biggest reason is they don't really have somebody to stay in front of Ja Morant. Now, it's possible tonight Gary Payton Jr., or Gary Payton II, I believe, is back, and he's pretty athletic, but Ja still has always had good games against them. My kind of fear, though, is I kind of think that there's a chance that this game plays out a lot like Friday night's game against the Nuggets did, where you're going to be kind of pleasantly surprised that the Grizzlies are up, but then when it gets down in crunch time, you just see, like, the Grizzlies, it's like Ja, Jaren, and Dez, and people can play 5-on-3 defensively, and it becomes impossible for them to score. I threw out this note, I think I threw it out during the game on Twitter, but we talked about it yesterday. Tim, I don't think I've ever seen this in my life. The Grizzlies in the final 7 minutes of the game on Friday night against Denver did not make a basket. Whew. Technically, it's 6:58. So Ja hits an 8-foot floater. They added a few free throws. I can't remember if it was two or three. But like, that's the other thing. They scored 14 points total in the fourth quarter. And I think it was like 11 came in the first 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. Like, that's kind of the problem, is that the Grizzlies have the fourth quarter offense in the last 20 games has just been god awful. They're like third in the league. And then, you know, I think the other thing to remember about that play-in game that we're referencing, that was the weird year where some people had fans, some didn't. There's obviously, San Francisco is going to be a city that was going to be very strict on the rules. There was no one in there, so the crowd couldn't really get going at you. And then the Grizzlies have not won a game in California. I think DeMichael Cole, my buddy, he put the stat up. They haven't won since January of last year in the state of California. So you got that working against you. But I just kind of feel like all the pressure's on the Warriors simply for, A, how much longer do they have? And B, if you don't win this game, that means you're in this weird, yet again, another play-in scenario where, congratulations, even if you win it, your reward is the Thunder.
Well, and I think, you know, there's an argument that can be made that the Warriors benefited from losing on Sunday. And I'm saying an argument. I'm not saying it's the right argument, but you could argue that it is, because if you win tonight, you still have decent amount of rest before you play Houston, a team with no experience in the postseason outside of what, Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet or whatever.
You have a good chunk of your roster that this will be their first time, and they're going up against the Warriors.
And you're going up against one of the most tested playoff franchises out there. So you can make that argument. However, you lose this game if you're the Warriors. And yeah, now you're facing a turnaround in 2 days with a pretty aging roster, and you're facing an Oklahoma City team that, look, I know it's
coming.
Well,
I mean, you'd have to, I mean, like, let's also point out, like, you'd have to, if Anthony Davis has a big two games, it's not like I'm saying, oh my God, this can't happen. Like,
sure.
That could be a bad matchup for them.
No, no doubt. I mean, look, this franchise dealt with it in 21. No one thought the Grizzlies were going to beat the Warriors on that night. I remember talking about it at VSIN, and I'm like, does anyone out there think the Warriors are going to lose this game? Because I kind of do. Now, I don't think they'll lose tonight. That's just my gut feel. I think the Warriors will take care of business, but, you know, am I racing to...
Well, I mean, like, they played 2 weeks ago. Now, granted, it was here. They played 2 weeks ago, and it required a 52-point performance from Steph, and they went a perfect, I think, 27 of 27 from the line.
Well, and I think that's something that's really important to discuss, right? Like you said, it was in Memphis, but These two teams just played, and it was a full-strength Golden State team. Jimmy Butler played 38 yep. minutes. You know, Steph Curry, as you mentioned, played 37. They had this starting lineup that's been as strong as ever since acquiring Jimmy Butler. Everybody played in that game, and you needed Steph Curry to go 12 of 20 from three and drop 52 and to win by nine. So, you know, it's a spot that I'm sure all your listeners remember. It was a 13-point lead after the first quarter, lead at the half, and or 13-point lead for the Golden State Warriors, but the Grizzlies came back. So
it was a one-point game with two to play.
Yeah. So I just, you know, the more I think about it, like I said, I think the Warriors win tonight, but I don't know. I get this feeling that it has a chance of being pretty competitive because I sort of feel like this matchup is not a terrible one for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I mean, it's the, as bad as the season has ended, it is the rare opportunity where it feels like the Grizzlies actually have one game where they can kind of save their season. Because even if they go and they lose to the Rockets in five or six, you still get this moment. And it will at least make people feel a little bit better because just everyone hates the Warriors. I don't know. Like, to me, it's just going to be a matter of, tell me how the Grizzlies shoot from three and tell me how the Warriors shoot from three. Like it's kind of dumb that it feels like that's what basketball's been distilled down to, but I just really feel like in that game, Steph, I think he was 8 of 10 in the first half, still goes 12 of 20, and you know, Butler was able to get, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, can you get Jaren to stay on the floor longer? I think the Grizzlies have a depth problem, but with it being just a one game all out, I'm not as that concerned. To me, it's just a question of, can you get Ja, Jaren, and Dez to all play well? And this is a matchup that historically the three of them have played pretty well in.
You know, it's funny when you think of the Warriors, and they had that stretch, right? The Memphis game was part of it, where they go to Memphis, they win. They go to L.A., they beat the Lakers. And then they host the Nuggets, and they beat the Nuggets. And at that point, which was a little over, not even 2 weeks ago, when they beat Denver. It was Friday the 4th. A lot of the thought was like, wow, here we go again. Like, really?
Yep.
One last run for the Warriors. They could get a three seed. You know, this could be pretty magical. They lose to Houston. They destroy Phoenix. And then, you know, what was it? Last year, San Antonio, I think on the last game of the season, beat Denver.
That sounds right. To push Denver down.
Yeah, so Denver got the two seed, if I remember correctly, maybe the three. And this Warriors team,
I think
home,
they were the two, right? Because didn't the Lakers come out of the play-in?
Right, they beat they swept the Lakers, and then the Timberwolves beat them.
Yeah.
You lost to San Antonio. I mean, they tried in that San Antonio game, and they lost. So it's not like this is a flawless Warriors team by any stretch of the imagination. They were trying and they lost to the San Antonio Spurs. Now, I think Harrison Barnes had like a come to Jesus moment. He went 6 of 9 from three in that game. But still, I mean, they lost to the Spurs, a team that's tanking. They lost to them in an important game that really changed the trajectory of the end of the season. If they win that game, the Golden State Warriors are not in the play-in.
No, and I mean, so like, if you tell me, like, I'm not turning on the game tonight expecting the Grizzlies to win. I'm turning on the game thinking that it is possible for them to win.
100%.
Like, that's kind of how I'm viewing it. All right, this is the other thing I want to talk about quickly before we take a break and get Tim Gay on the show. Where are you on the Nico thing? Because there's a lot of good takes out there. Of course, you know, this is win one for the coaches or win one for the schools. Pulling him now, I'm kind of this opinion, and see if you agree. I think Team Nico wildly screwed this up.
Oh, I think that's the only way you can look at this. I think Team Nico, and then you get the report from Josh Pate that apparently multiple Tennessee players' representation the week leading up to the Ohio State ass whooping said, hey, you got more money? And I don't know if that's a culture thing at Tennessee, or if that's just a
I'll say this. I believe that that happens just about everywhere.
Right. And what Josh essentially said was these representatives of these players are pretty much telling schools, we signed up for 12, and if we're making the playoff, we should get more money. So that's maybe a separate issue. But, oh, there is no doubt that Team Nico is, I think, if not 100%, 99.9% reason to blame here. I mean, they got more money than they that he deserved out of high school. He had a lot of hype coming into last year. Was he terrible? No. Was he great? No. They made the playoff. Expectation is he's back next year. I don't know all the, you might know more about the specifics, but to start sniffing around, and then you get the report just a little while ago that there were two reports today that I saw about Nico. One was if the price for Nico gets down to $1 million, then teams will be interested. And then I also saw that Tulane is now, we're good. We don't need Nico.
Yes. So that happened today. So I guess what I would say is here's where I think they really made a mistake. It appears his dad's running the show. And his dad is not a professional agent. And
shocker.
I hope everybody's sitting down for this. His dad kind of fell for, like, you know, we've been talking about this the last few days. When I see on Twitter, player X signs with school for whatever the value is, I largely just go, I move on. Because I typically think that is the equivalent of the NFL contract that gets announced by the agent, that it's the highest possible dollar figure that's never going to happen. And so he ends up reading John Talti and CBS Sports and 247 Sports report about Mensah from Tulane that went to Duke and signed for $4 million. Do I really think Mensah's getting $4 million? No. Do I think he's getting a lot of money? Yes, I do. But because he doesn't know he's not a real agent. He doesn't know the actual dollar figures. I think he's just seeing these numbers and he's like, well, Nico's worth more than that. And what I would say the dumb part of it was they were banking on this next transfer window, which I believe is 10 days.
Tomorrow.
They were banking on that being the ultimate leverage that what were you going to do? Well, the mistake that was made, and it seems pretty obvious at this point, they did not have a floor offer. Like, okay, if we leave Tennessee, we know we're at least getting $3 million from this school. But by doing it when they did, that took out the SEC schools. And to me, that's where you just limited the bidding. How many schools are going to out there, if you can't transfer within the league, how many schools can realistically pay you $2.4 million or more?
I didn't know that. So that is a rule in the SEC?
Yes.
You're not allowed to transfer within conference?
And as we've said on the show, I assume it's possible somebody could challenge it legally, but what I would tell you is the SEC is pretty good about when they collectively as a league decide something, they don't sue each other.
Okay. So that's an important thing that I was not aware
Correct.
Of.
Correct.
I thought he could go anywhere.
No.
He
can technically transfer there, but he'd have to sit.
Okay. And I mean, and here's the problem too, right, for Nico, who, you know, he's a fine quarterback, right? But I don't think as we did the exercise on Friday, there's a lot of good quarterbacks this year. And the more I dug into it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of interesting. But you're also, not to say that it's impossible, but you're also kind of hitting the spring window where if you wanted to do this, you should have left in the winter. You would have had
Correct.
Plenty of suitors. You would have really got to pick your spot that made sense for you. And now, if he does find a landing spot, let's say it is North Carolina, you know, maybe it works out, but you're kind of limited on your options, and they're not going to really have time to kind of craft the offense. I guess they could, but it seems like it's a wild mistake, and they just kind of overshot here, and, you know, we'll see how it plays out, and kind of a a learning experience for Nico and for other players too. Like, yes, they have a lot of power and they're making a lot of money. I mean, I don't really have issues with it, but sometimes, you know, it felt like, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. I know we got to hit a break, but like, there we had gotten so far in the player empowerment era, and I'm fine with it. But we were going to get to a tipping point where it's like, they're now making millions of dollars, so they're going to get cut. Like, this is going to happen, and people might not be ready for it. Whoa, 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 they're student-athletes. Yeah, they are, but now they're making millions of dollars, so now they can be criticized by media. They can be released by these, you know, these schools, and that's the nature of the beast that we're going down with players getting the money that I'm cool with them getting, but if you want more money, it's going to become more professional style and more cutthroat.
Well, and I also think, like, another thing that Nico is dealing with by handling it the way that he's done, it is clear that that has hurt the market value, because people are saying, like, man, I don't know, it's kind of putting up with a headache. It's already late. And so even
Did you see the report? So on Saturday, when the news came out that they were cutting ties before the spring game at Tennessee, I was like, oh, he's going to USC. Immediately, John Bryce from Football Scoop was like, he is not going to USC. They have no interest. I was like, whoa, okay.
So what I think everyone's doing, though, is everyone's saying no interest because they think, all right, like, I think it's entirely possible he's going to play somewhere next year. He's going to clearly be on a worse team, and he's going to play for less money. So hat tip to them. All right, we got to take a break. Timothy Gay is on the line. His new book, Rory Land, is out on May 13th. We're going to talk to him about Rory McIlroy. We'll do that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
FM, ESPN. Timothy Gay is a Pulitzer-nominated author. His forthcoming book, Rory Land, takes a look at Rory McIlroy's life on and off the course. It's available on May the 13th. You can pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. He's kind enough to join us now. So I guess, Timothy, let's start with Sunday. Is winning the Grand Slam better or worse for presale?
Oh, I think it's much better. And I want to publicly thank Rory McIlroy for coming through in the clutch for me.
Well, and I also, spirit of full disclosure for the audience, Timothy had written me a couple of weeks ago, and as my audience knows, there's very few things in my life that I can truly just root like a kid for. Rory is one of them, and I did not want to jinx it. Obviously, every single year what happens at Augusta sets the tone for the entire year. It's like the rinse-repeat. Yep. Disappointing Masters result. Rory's mopey for about 6 weeks. We eventually maybe find a little something at a U.S. Open. And then we just kind of move on. And it's like, okay, well, that's how you go 11 years without a major. But I think the first thing I want to ask you is, what was going through your head when he's 84 yards out on 13 and he's got a wedge in his hands?
Yeah, not to be too curmudgeon, Jeffrey, but I think it was 86 yards.
Okay, 86, sorry. Maybe he hit it 84 and that's why it's in the drink.
The problem, yeah. No, literally, Rory McIlroy could have pulled that shot off blindfolded. That was a 1 in 1,000 kind of chip that he just completely whiffed on. And I have to admit, I kind of fell to my knees and got up and told my wife I need to take a little walk outside, because at that point I had already figured Rory was going to, you know, knock that thing inside 10 feet, had a decent chance to make the putt, would take a solid 4-shot lead down the stretch at Augusta. I thought he was going to win going away the way he used to win majors going away back when he was a kid.
No, I mean, so my wife was up there and she's a very nervous sports watcher. And so yeah. She had been, you know, we started watching, and then after the first hole, she just takes off downstairs. And so she started like watching YouTube at that point.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it was one of those weird things where I'm getting texts from everyone like, you know, hey, life's worth living. You know, don't swallow a bullet. I got
exactly.
That text. I got all this. Weirdly, I kept telling my friends, I think vibes were worse than reality was. Like, he misses the drive on one by a yard.
Yep.
He had been in that bunker on two twice earlier this week, and he
correct.
Just missed it again. And I was like, it's not that bad yet. But
yep.
But vibes were obviously awful, and you could just feel the energy being sucked out. But then
he admitted as much.
Oh, yeah.
Afterwards. Yeah.
I mean, he even said it. He's like, yeah, but I think it was probably better that he got punched in the mouth, because I was trying to explain to people part of what happened at St. Andrews a couple of years ago.
Yep.
When he had the lead, it's a 4-shot lead. He's tied with Hovland. And I think his game plan was, I just have to beat Vic. If I can beat Vic, it's on. And Hovland was just a disaster that day. And so he passes
correct.
Him right off the bat. And then Rory's just standing out there. I always say, like, he's ADHD. Like, if the shot's hard and he like can focus, like he can pull off that. But if it's an 86-yard wedge shot, he's going to hit the most uncommitted, like awful swing that you'll see just because he gets bored.
Yeah.
But what happened is he left the door open for Cam Smith to go on the run that he did, and Cam went and took it from him.
Right.
But by the time I was thinking, though, I almost wish the ball on 11 would have gone in the water, because I think he needed the jolt. If the ball goes in the water on 11, I think he plays 13 differently, and maybe we see a different result. But without going shot by shot, I think the larger point is, what does it say to you that this is the way that he won his Masters?
It's just classic Rory, and his great buddy Shane Lowry said as much afterward, that it's just too tough for Rory at the moment to win something going away. He just, with Rory, you got to take the good with the bad. And Jeffrey, you are absolutely correct. The easier the shot, the greater the likelihood that Rory does something dumb with it.
I cannot tell you how many times I've watched a double bogey from 100 yards in the middle of the fairway.
Oh, yeah.
rinse, repeat. Awesome.
Yeah, here is the thing. I say in the book, I quote three great players, their prescription for winning major championships. Lee Trevino says, avoid soft bogeys. Jack Nicklaus says, play smart percentage golf. And Tiger Woods says, you've got to avoid three putts.
Yeah.
Rory flunked all three of those tests, if you think about it, Jeffrey. On Sunday, he not only made soft bogeys, he made soft double bogeys. He didn't play percentage golf. Think of the shot he played at 5 from the woods on the right-hand side of the fairway around the TV tower.
Dottie said he had a window.
I worried that we were going to hit that, hear the ping of his shot hitting the TV tower and bouncing right back into the woods, unplayable. And then
seven.
Remember up through
he hit the limb.
Trees?
He hit the limb.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And he should have made that putt. I thought he came a little bit out of his sort of bulldog mentality. He started laughing because it was such a crazy low percentage play that he made through the pine trees. And he looked over at Dottie Pepper of CBS and kind of doffed his cap a little bit. I said to Elizabeth, oops, it's easy for Rory to lose his focus. And I think he did. That putt should have been down. There was nothing to that little 9 or 10 footer he had just straight down the hill, and he left it 3 or 4 inches short. But the final point I want to make, the final test I say in the book, is the Irish poet Seamus Heaney, who said, you've got to believe that a further shore is reachable from here. And Rory did. He never lost his self-belief. He hung in there. He comes from a very tough, gritty, blue-collar background outside of Belfast, and man, did he ever show it on Sunday.
I think that's the other question as we talk here with Timothy Gay. His book is going to be Rory Land, available on May the 13th. What is it about Rory that inspired you to take this long look at him?
Well, I don't root for Rory because he's Irish. I root for him because I'm Irish, and his story has always fascinated me. The blue collar background, the two parents who sacrificed everything to give their kid a chance to chase his dream. They worked literally around the clock. Jerry had 3 jobs. Rosie worked the graveyard shift at a 3M factory in Bangor, which is just north of Hollywood. And Rory plays with such style and such panache, Jeffrey. I'm sure that's why you're a fan, too.
It's the golf swing.
That swing is the 8th wonder of the world, and he's had it since he was a toddler, basically. It is just a thing of beauty. And he plays, he makes golf look so easy and so pretty that when he is on, nobody, not even Scottie Scheffler, can compete with him. The problem is, I think he gets a little bored. I think he loses his edge and his focus too often. And he's also been snake bit in majors for the past 11 years. So many strange, wicked things have happened to him. And he said in his press conference at Augusta late Sunday night, look, I had some good luck in his round on Sunday, and that makes up for all the bad luck he's had at Augusta over the years.
Yeah, I really did. Like, the longer, because I've now, I think I'm on my 4th rewatch, and my wife asked me, like, are you going to watch this again? And I just looked at her and go, is it on? Yes, I will be watching this again.
Household sounds a lot like mine.
Yeah, if she's like, I can't, she's like, he's going to win. I go, I know, I got to make sure. And so far we're 3 for 3 of making sure that it happens. But
right. Yeah.
I think the other thing that's interesting, well, I was going to ask you about this, because typically, and especially with Europe's dominance at the Ryder Cup,
yep,
the European star, I mean, it's not like that it's total xenophobia, you know, how dare the Euros come over here, but they don't catch on at this level. Why do you think Rory has, why do you think he's caught on with the American audience?
I think a couple of reasons. One, he came to us as an 18-year-old. The first time we saw him was Carnoustie at the Open Championship in 2007. He was just a kid, still an amateur at that point. He won the silver medal as low amateur at that Open. But he's a freckle-faced kid. As I say in the book, he is golf's ageless Opie Taylor. He is everybody's kid brother. He's the kid brother we all wish we had. And we were so taken by him, this little, you know, he's listed at 5'9", and that's a little bit generous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just, I'm sure you have followed him around a couple of times. He's just this tiny guy. He hits the ball so darn long, you can't believe it.
He's hard to watch on the range, because even on the range, you can't follow the golf ball. It goes so high in the air.
Literally true, and I'll tell you a quick story. At the Players Championship in 2023, just after the book had been green-lighted by my publisher, I was following Rory around, and we were at the range watching him. And there were maybe 200-300 fans spread along the range line. As soon as Rory started swinging, pretty soon it became, you know, maybe half the people were there. By the time he had got maybe 10 minutes into his routine, there were literally everybody was gathered, and people were all muttering to themselves, look at how gorgeous that golf swing is. That's the hold that Rory McIlroy has over us. And he's had it for all these years. And I think his performance on Sunday is going to open him up. Now that he's got the monkey off his back, Jeffrey, I think he's going to win some more majors maybe this year.
That's kind of the bait, though, I've had internally. I think it's going one of two ways. I think we're going to be on the bender of benders, and yep, deservedly so. He's through all the crap he's taken, he deserves it.
Yep.
But it's like, it does set up. It's like, hey, man, Quail Hollow is kind of your spot. Like, you got that coming up. Oakmont's going to be a big ballpark. There's basically going to be 10 people that can win there because it's just going to be a driving contest.
That's
and then you're
exactly
back to Port.
Correct.
And then you're back to Port Rush. And
yep,
and it's your, you know, it's in Northern Ireland. I know you can get into the geopolitical side of that, but you know,
I do in the book.
And you know, he misses the cut there, but he had that heater of a run where he was trying to make the cut, just going all out, and like that was honestly until Shane probably won. That was the most thrilling part of it. So I can see where it opens him up, because now it's like you can't hurt me anymore. But I think we oftentimes think of someone breaks through at the Masters and okay, like same thing with Sergio, like, okay, this is going to open him up.
Yep.
Maybe now he's going to accomplish what he should have. And with DJ, I think you thought maybe there's more to come, and I get there's live implications and all
sure
that. But like, yep, I don't know. I guess that's kind of the other thing that I was talking about with my dad. What if Rory winning lights a fire under Scottie Scheffler? What if it lights up Xander Schauffele? Like, it's
yep,
it's not just Rory. It's what is it? You know, it's playing well at a time when the other great players kind of aren't. Because I do think a big part of this week was Scottie came in and he's just a little yep off right now, and he still finishes fourth, and it felt like he
yeah
played like terribly, but he still finished fourth.
Yeah, he kind of ran out of holes. You got the feeling on that backside, Jeffrey, that Scotty was really coming on strong, but he was just a little bit too far back. But you're absolutely right. I think they motivate each other at that level. And you mentioned, you know, Xander, he is up there too. And the live guys, and, you know, DeChambeau is far from my favorite golfer.
God. Sunday, I'm at church. I'm at church, and my mom goes, I can't believe you're here. And I was like, I was made to be here. And so, but as I say, it wasn't just, I think I could handle Rory losing again. I've been here before. Like, there's nothing you can do on that front. But
yep,
losing yep to him again.
Yep.
And watching him do this, like and subscribe, YouTube, oh, I'm a different guy now. It's like, I just can't stand any of it. It was going to be awful. I don't think
yeah
I, that was what I couldn't handle.
I'm writing a new epilogue for the UK edition of Rory Land, and I compared DeChambeau's arrival on the first tee to Apollo Creed climbing into the ring in Rocky II. It just could not have been tackier or more flamboyant, puffing his chest out and making Rory wait and doing all of the stuff that he pulled on Rory at Pinehurst number two last summer when he was, you know, leading the gallery in the USA chance as if it were a Ryder Cup. It wasn't. It wasn't the U.S. versus Northern Ireland. It was Bryson DeChambeau versus Rory McIlroy. There was no need for him to resort to that.
It was Bryson DeChambeau versus a hook.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right.
That was it was nice because I, even though he took the lead so quickly, I could just tell, I'm like, oh, he didn't hit 400 golf balls as an ego trip. He hit 400 golf balls because he has no idea where it's going. That was the thing that stood out to me.
I mean, how many loopy hooks?
Oh,
did
I mean,
he hit? It looked like me out there.
I mean, I think it turns out maybe every club being a 6-iron may not work off uneven lies. That's just a thought here for the scientist. Maybe he can try to fix that one day. But I think the other thing that was kind of that seemed that a lot of people were asking me, and I don't know how much information you have on this. Do we know why Rory and Erica called off the divorce?
You know, it's a very sensitive matter. And as I say in the very first page of the book, I have no inside intelligence, no outside intelligence on that, and have no interest in exploring that part of Rory's story at all. All I can say is that they have worked through what clearly was a very difficult period of their marriage. They seem happy. They're building a new home outside London that they're both very excited about. That little girl, Poppy, is adorable, and she made one of the great clutch putts of all time in the Augusta Part 3 competition on Wednesday, and it kind of did set the tone, I think, for Rory for the entire week.
No, the thing that was awesome is like it was a great moment, and then you can just tell it's like, man, she's the opposite of the old man. She wanted nothing to do with the camera. You had Shane's daughter coming in trying to like hoist her up like a football coach and just going nuts and bananas. And she's like, I just want to be out of here.
And look, you mentioned Shane. I ended the book. The original last paragraph of the book was imagining what it would be like if Rory could win another major. And of course, Shane would be there to celebrate with him. And that's exactly what happened, Jeffrey. It was surreal. My wife and I stared as Rory was, you know, walking his way up to the clubhouse, greeting, you know, old friends and family members. And there was Shane. And the two of us had trouble, controlling the flow of tears. It was so beautiful. They were two brothers. They have known each other since I think Rory was 10 and Shane was 12. All those years together in junior golf and traveling to different tournaments all over the place when they were kids, and they're absolute best friends and neighbors in Florida. And Rory has said, we see each other socially 4 or 5 times a week. So their kids are absolute best friends. It was just a beautiful moment and something straight out of a Hollywood script.
No, I mean, that's what I kept saying. It's like it was a Disney movie and a horror movie and like a slow drama. Like it was everything all at once watching it on TV. But the other thing that you mentioned, though, that I thought was interesting, I once caddied for another Irish golfer, or I caddied in a group for a U.S. Open qualifier, and Seamus Power was in the group.
Yeah.
And I was like, Seamus, you went to East Tennessee State and you're from Ireland. And I'm like, how'd that happen? I was like, isn't that where Rory was committed at like 14? He's like, oh yeah, the reason why I met ETSU is because Rory committed and then turned pro at like 16. And so they had the scholarship and they were able to pick me off. He's like, so yeah, I can thank Rory for bringing me to America. But the other thing about Shane, I was pulling for on Saturday beyond Rory finishing the round, I'm sitting there going, I need Shane to get in the final group, because there was a logjam for second, because I believed in my heart Shane was not going to let Rory lose on Sunday. And so like I'm like, I need him in there. And also I was just doing whatever it could to get out of my mind that it was going to be him and Bryson in the final group. But we got all of it anyway.
Yeah, you and I are telepathic, man. We got to get together sometime because we are absolutely in total agreement on all this. Yeah, I was rooting hard for Shane.